phone, you bird brain.
What do? Backflips? You jump up there in a silly suit? What do you do?
You go BAM! I want you to play there.
Hey, what's up, everybody? 7:30-ish, Fast Freddy here at the Youngstown Studios in beautiful downtown Youngstown. And we are ready for another episode of Fast Freddy Rocks Youngstown. It's nice to be here in the summertime. It's, you know, still daylight here at 7:30. And today I have a very special guest and a guy that I'm really happy to interview because I've been a fan of this band for many years. With me is Michael Glubicki from the band Rusted Root, and he's working on a new project. And he's also going to be in Sharpsville tomorrow at Thelma Sports Nook. So we're going to talk about the history of Rusted Root. We're going to talk about Michael's history and how he got into music and some of the great gigs that they have played over the years. And, of course, we want to get you ready for the big gig tomorrow because one of the highlights tomorrow is the band is going to do the entire When I Wake album in its entirety. And I think that's kind of the trademark album for Rusted Root. So, Michael, nice to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Freddie. Good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about what we got going on at Thelma's tomorrow right off the bat.
We're going to play the whole When I Woke album, and we kind of changed it up a bit. I got my new band Uprooted, and we're kind of doing sort of, you know, just sort of bringing it up to date and doing some crazy stuff, some crazy arrangements, and we've got two background singers. We've got bass, guitar, drums, percussion, and bass. So it's a full 7-piece band.
So this is going to be a lot of fun. Now, Rusted Root has been around on the Pittsburgh music scene for many years. And the one thing that I find interesting about Rusted Root is the kind of music that you play, your style of music. It's not something that you would think originated in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Do you hear that often when people say that band's from Pittsburgh, from the South? You know, you guys started playing on the South side of Pittsburgh and you listen to this music and you're going, whoa, this doesn't sound like something that would come out of Pittsburgh. You know, when I think of Pittsburgh, I'm thinking of, you know, Joe Grushecki or Donnie Iris, the Clarks, Norman Nardini, whoever. And all of a sudden we have this band that has this like new world vibe. How did this whole thing come about?
Well, I had a couple cousins that played music. One was in a reggae band. One was in a world beat band. And they kind of, the reggae band cousin, he taught me how to play drums. And then my other cousin taught me how to play guitar. But they were sort of open to like African drumming and all kinds of stuff like they were doing at the colleges, like Carnegie Mellon and Pitt University. So they were kind of doing it. And then a friend of mine in high school, he found a African drumming cassette tape, like a mixtape of all these different beats and stuff. And he would try to learn it on his drums. And then I would play guitar. I put like a whole stack of PA system in his house. And we would just take like 2 days. And I would just crank my acoustic guitar and slam out these rhythms to it. And it's sort of like, when you turn the acoustic guitar up that loud, you can hear like things in it. You know, you start to hear the drums, you start to hear harmonies and crazy stuff starts to fly out of the room.
So that's pretty interesting. Now, how did you get started in music? I mean, what were some of the bands you were listening to and, you know, when you were growing up and like, what were some of the first albums or records that you bought and what really lit the fire underneath you?
Well, I mean, for people growing up in the 80s, you know, Van Halen was sort of like the go-to band at that point. And so I remember seeing a lot of live shows of Van Halen, people kind of, you know, gathering in groups of large numbers and going down being at the Civic Arena. And, so that kind of like was pretty cool. I mean, Donnie Iris was a big influence on me. The fact that he came out of Pittsburgh and had such a huge success, I was like, I could try this, you know? And so basically, I was in college. Well, growing up, I listened to like Stones, Beatles, a lot of Cat Stevens, acoustic stuff, and Stones, and, you know, but when, you know, it started to get a little heavier, so I getting into like more like hard rock and Iron Maiden and Black Sabbath and Van Halen. And then, you know, that energy is in Rusted Root. You know, I think hard rock, that hard rock energy is it there, you know, at times. And so, but then like Peter Gabriel started doing stuff with African drumming and different types of instrumentation, and Paul Simon. And at that point, it was just kind of wide open to kind of try it and do it.
Now, you talk about a little earlier, we were talking about even the drum stuff that you were doing on your Woke album. You break out with like a drum tracks right out of the beginning, you know, that which I think is pretty unique. You know, a lot of people, you have this big album and you started out with the drum tracks. Tell us a little bit about what inspired that and how that made that album a little bit different. You know, why did you decide to have that like starting the album?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was done, we recorded it in L.A., and that day, I think a bunch of people showed up at the studio, and we just started going into it, and then in the middle of it, you kind of hear me, you know, scream out, ecstasy, ecstasy, and that's how we ended up going into the next song. So it was kind of like this magical experience of, hey, it worked, you know, and you know, you didn't have any studio trickery to it, other than we ended up laying some like sound effects and weird stuff, feedback and stuff into the drum track. So yeah, I mean, it was just like this magical moment of getting. We had both the take of the drums and the take of ecstasy, and that's how it starts, you know.
That's very cool. Now let's go back a little bit. Now you and your buddy are sitting there, you're playing drums, you're playing these acoustic guitars at a real loud level. So then how did Rusted Roots start to develop? And did you play in some bands before that? What was the evolution from going from that into Rusted Root?
Well, I ended up trying to go to college, and it didn't work out for me. And I was getting kind of like really depressed. And I wasn't incapable. It was just that it wasn't a fit for me, you know, and at that time. And so I ended up, we had a fraternity that was just a bunch of guys, you know, smoking weed and doing acid and playing music all the time. And that was our frat. And that's when I started writing some songs in my dorm by myself. And I started to go like, oh, man, I feel a little bit better. My depression's going away a little bit. And next song I wrote, I was like, oh, I feel a little bit better. And finally, I was like, man, this is just what I'm going to do. So I dropped out of college, didn't tell my parents, went to Lawrenceville in Pittsburgh and rented out a place for like $50 a month to tell you what kind of place it was. And got a four-track and some instruments and brought my PA down there that I had. And just sat and wrote songs and started to envision the type of band that I wanted. Eventually I ended up putting some ads in the paper, and I knew Liz from high school, and she came down to sing, and she knew the other band members from Pitt, where they went to school there.
And so then after that, then where did you go from there? So now you're doing that. Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you before I get into this. So what happened when your parents finally found out that, hey, mom, dad, I'm not in college anymore. I got this vision in my head of this band that I want to do, and I think this is where I'm headed. How did that whole thing go down? What was that conversation like?
I'm not even sure. My dad was sick at the time. He got leukemia. So there was so much going on in the family that it just sort of like flew by, you know.
So that was like probably some of the least of your family's worries at that point. Okay, he's playing in a band, but we got to worry about dad and all these other things that are going on. So it just kind of flew under the radar, sort of. So then you guys started playing at, is that when you come up? Well, first of all, then how'd you come up with the name Rusted Root? Where did that come from? And now you go from this rehearsal space. Is that when you started playing down on the South Side, or how did that whole thing go down?
Well, our first gig was at the Graffiti Rock Challenge we got into to do this competition. And I remember like being downstairs at graffiti and my heart was pounding so hard that I could see my shirt moving. And
oh wow.
Yeah, I mean it was 1,000 people. It was like our first gig, and I put a garbage can behind the bass amp just in case I was, you know, had to throw up. And but once we got up, we kind of it went great. And then we ended up getting to the finals, and then from that point we started playing smaller gigs after that and kind of working on a craft a little bit. And then we started spiraling out of Pittsburgh, coming to Ohio, Athens and Kent and upstate New York, West Virginia. I started playing Nyabingis down in Morgantown, and which is now 123 Street. And then from there, we really just started to like spiral out. We ended up selling 30,000 copies of our first demo album. And then the record company kind of got hold of, you know, what we were doing, and they came out and saw us. And then, you know, but it took us a while. It took us almost a year to sign because we were kind of
good. So at what point did you realize like, hey man, this thing might take off. We might have something going here. How did that whole thing happen? When did you say, man, you know what? I think we're onto something.
I would say whenever we hit Nyabingi in West Virginia and crowd started, like we started playing two shows as opposed to one. Ozzy's Down Under. Where was that at? That was in Ohio, not far from you. That was an old club in a basement. And then we started doing like three shows there. Upstate New York, Rochester, it went from like one to three shows. And you know, once that started happening, it was unstoppable at that point.
Oh, that's really crazy. Now the Nyabingi, of course, was like they had one in Youngstown too. I think the same guy might have ran the place. Now that was like sort of an alternative club. Now people got to understand, you know, why don't you describe like what your sound is all about too? So maybe people that have never heard of Rusted Root, they understand what these clubs were like and on this college scene. It wasn't like you were playing the corner bar at, you know, here or there, right? I mean, you had that certain, you know, this is like, I would say early days of alternative music. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I mean, this is right when the Seattle sound was getting together. This is right when Jeff Buckley was putting his stuff together, and we all kind of hit it once, you know. So it was a special time. I mean, we ended up going on tour with Dave Matthews, and when we came to Pittsburgh, Dave Matthews was sort of like, he was about 8 or 9 months ahead of us. So we were on his coattail. And, but when we got to Pittsburgh, he ended up opening up for us at, Duquesne University. The place there, it was a big venue and about 5,000 people showed up, but we were headliners there. And then, which is kind of funny. And then, but you know, for describing our sound, I kind of can't, you know, it's just very eclectic and very soulful. I always tried to like make things that were unique and try to make them a little undescribable, you know. And anytime I try to describe it, it kind of relates what it is, I think, in my mind.
Yeah, right. You just have to hear it. Now, if you've never heard their music, just look up Rusted Root and you'll see what it's all about. You know, you're kind of a little bit of jam band and the world beat and everything. It's just this huge melting pot of all sorts of styles. And I'll tell you, a band like yours too, I think is important, is that you create a vibe. Do you feel like for your kind of sound that the whole vibe of the band is pretty important? Does that play a part into the whole thing?
Absolutely. I mean, that was sort of the whole, you know, that's what everything was focused on, was sort of presenting us as, you know, people that grew up, you know, together, you know, and even though we hadn't, and people always thought, you know, that we were, you know, childhood friends or something, you know, and it had that vibe to it, a very thick, palatable vibe to it. And now a new band, Uprooted, it's coming around to that, you know, but we're doing more sort of more advanced kind of stuff, you know. It's more theatrical, musical, like cute, like yets of like crazy stuff happening. And we're working on a new record too, so that's coming around. And it's really kind of cool it's happening again.
So what was it like with the early days of Dave Matthews? How was that whole scene like evolving? Why don't you tell us a little more about that?
Well, Dave was kind of like, he was like very into the frat houses, you know, like he was very into the college scenes and very, very focused on the colleges. And we were kind of like, we were more into like down-home festivals. We were more into like, we did some like hippie type stuff, more Grateful Dead-y type stuff. But you know, we also did what Dave was doing, you know, a lot of colleges and that. And, but he kind of like didn't want anything to do with that sort of hippie vibe. So we kind of picked up on that about halfway through. And you know, he's one of the funniest dudes ever. He's literally like a comedian. He just comes into the room and everybody just starts laughing at what he does. And he's just a hilarious guy.
Now you opened for a lot of different people too. I saw, you know, you opened for Santana, the Allman Brothers, Page and Plant. What were some of these other tours that you were on? What were some of those things like? Because I could see Santana. I could see you guys fitting in with Santana because he's got like that spiritual vibe going on. And I think you guys, I could see how you would probably fit in really good with the Santana crowd. Am I right on that?
Yeah. Yeah, we did two tours with him. And first day we showed up on the first tour and he goes, after your set, come on up on my set. We're going to play some music. And I wasn't like, I wasn't a proficient guitarist. I mean, I could sit and write songs, develop things on my own through just hearing like where I wanted it to go. But I wasn't the guy that jump in on a jazz set and like riff, you know? And so anyhow, we go up and he ends up playing 7 songs with us, keeps us up there. There's like 16 people on stage. And I'm sweating, like full body sweat. And he turns to me and he goes, you. And then he walked off stage and lit a cigar. And I was terrified. And was in front of like 20 people. And I didn't really know what I was doing. But the funny thing was, is that he studied our music and he knew my style and he knew what keys I was proficient in from my own music. And he knew I was going to be able to do it. And I didn't know that. So when it happened, I was like pleasantly surprised that I knew what I was doing.
Oh, that's and pretty wild, cool. Man.
He would take me aside and take me in his dressing rooms. He would give me like sort of like the banner, counseling type stuff. He'd say, man, you need to get pissed off. He says, man, you're too nice. And I had to think about it for a while, you know, and it finally hit.
Yeah. But that had to be a great learning experience to be around Carlos Santana. Yeah. I mean, and especially the guy just seems so spiritual. And when you listen to him talk, I'm always mesmerized by when this guy talked. So was he like that all the time? Or if he was talking to you, was he like, you know, it seemed like, you know, when I watched that Dan Rather interview, and I can't think of anything that he said right off the top of my head, and it would probably be some of it was kind of deep that you probably wouldn't just remember and throw a quote out or whatever. But was he that kind of a guy when you were just around him? Was he always like, like almost on a different level, on a different plateau?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, there's a bunch of stories. I mean, he didn't like TVs when people were eating, or you know, and he would walk into the cafeteria you know, the crew and the stuff was sitting there watching whatever on the TV. He would come in and he'd just turn off all the TVs and then go grab it down. Everybody got quiet. It was his show, and he was paying for it, and paying for the food, and he wanted to eat quiet, and you know, all the time he could spiritual talk and just giving us advice and talking from the stage about, you know, his spiritual experiences. And it was wild, man. I mean, he was on another level, but I wouldn't say he was on another planet, because everybody understood what he was talking about. He was so good at conveying his spirituality to people, and not only musically, but just with words.
Right. Yeah. I'll tell you, man, Santana's one of my favorites. And I just think that he is just, he's just so cool, man. He's just so cool. And he's such a great guitarist, but that spiritual side of him really comes out. And I just wish off the top of my head, I could think of some of the things that he was talking about on that, on the Dan Rather interview, because I sat there the whole time and I was just like, man, this guy is exactly right. And you don't hear people talking about some of the stuff that he was talking about. And it just made so much sense. And you're just sitting there going, man, this guy's something else. I just think he's like from a different planet or whatever.
Yeah.
I see he's got his own line of weed too. Santana's got his own line of weed out there now. And I read like an article of him describing what you're going to get out of it and what's behind it and what's the motivating factors. I was like, man, okay, this sounds like something you want to try here, Just listening to how he described the products and what he hoped that you would achieve from the use of them. You know, it's not like, like say a Tommy Chong or a Willie Nelson, hey, let's burn one on the roof of the White House or whatever. It was like, wow, Carlos is serious about this, And let's see, you also opened for the Allman Brothers, man. That one of my all-time favorites. How was being out on the road with the Allmans? Because I could see, once again, Rusted Root fitting in with that Allman Brothers vibe, the hippie vibe, because it seemed like once Jerry was gone, it seemed like the Allman Brothers took over the jam band banner in a lot of ways, I think. Whoops, I think we're locked up here.
Yeah, I mean, the Allman Brothers were great. Yeah, it's locking up. I wonder if I maybe try getting just my service.
Oh, yeah, maybe. There you go.
Is it locking up still?
Yep. No, you're good now.
Yeah, so... Okay. Yeah, it just kind of, I think we did like 3 or 4 tours with them, and they were just to themselves, man. Mostly like the crew and Jimmo and some of the other guys we were close with, but Greg and Dwayne, they were just sort of like hidden, until the show. Greg would only smoke a new pack of cigarettes. And he'd take one out of a new pack of cigarettes and he'd throw it in his piano bench, the pack. So he had like 20 packs of cigarettes in there. I'd always go and steal cigarettes, because he'd only smoke one out of the whole pack. He wanted them real fresh.
That's pretty wild. And I saw in one of your bios that you said that touring with the Wailers was a real highlight. What was that like and what was that all about? Tell us a little bit about being on tour with the Wailers.
I mean, just that groove, man. Those grooves were, I've never heard anything like it. And they've kind of refined it in a live experience. So, like, oh, man, it's there's something really special about seeing them live. And we're playing with them in Pittsburgh August 28th with Jason Mraz.
Oh, that's going to be a good one. That's definitely going to be a good one. I love Fam. Did you ever party with Fam?
Yeah. We hung out. He was a little like, we had a little bit of like communication issues just because his accent was so thick. But for the most part, man, we had a great time with him, and we just partied it down. He would come and smoke a huge joint on our bus, and then he would kind of like go on stage. It was fun. We had a good time with him.
I remember I saw them one time down in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I don't know if the keyboard player they had with them at the time was like a regular part of the band or whatever, but I remember they all hit a joint on stage, and that keyboard player, his eyes were spinning. I was kind of like, I don't know if this guy's been with the band very long, because you know, just the look on his face, and then he just started playing, dun, dun, dun. And you can just see that this guy was blasted. I was like, oh, I don't know, man. I think these guys here could hang pretty good, but he seemed like that one kind of put him in orbit. But he was playing good nonetheless, you know. But yeah, I mean, I love the Wailers, and I love all that stuff.
That's
now
awesome.
Once again, talking about the When I Woke album, and you guys are going to be doing this in its entirety at Thelma's. Tell us a little bit more about the show. And what we can expect the people to come out and see what this is all about.
Yeah, it's a unique experience. Again, you kind of have to see it to understand it. We've got some really inspired musicians. We're going to take the music and its new eras. The music's pretty wide open, so you can take it many different places, and we will. And we tend to like really tap into the audience's energy and see where we want to take the music moment. And that's what I mean. Like it's going to be a magical experience. I don't know what it's going to be exactly like, because we feed so much off of the audience.
And then of course, Grant Street Exit is going to be opening. And if you like that Grateful Dead vibe and everything, I think it's going to be a real cool night tomorrow. That's what I think. And hopefully I'm going to be able to make it down to Thelma's, and you can find out more about that. Look them up on Facebook. And of course you're all over social media. Where can people find you and get more information, and, you know, check out Rusted Root and your new project Uprooted and everything else, and keep up to date on some of the new stuff you're working on? Where can they find all this stuff?
My website's michaelglebicki.com, and then my Facebook, Instagram is Michael Glebicki. You can just look it up there. We're working on a new record, some pretty phenomenal arrangements and new sounds for us. So people can tap into some of those videos of us in the studio. We're gonna start putting some stuff out. Yeah, and we're touring. We're touring all over the country. Gonna do this When I Woke tour.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Yeah, well, great. Listen, Michael, we got kind of a little shaky connection here going, so I'm gonna let you go, and hopefully I'll be down to see you at the show tomorrow. And when we get a chance to really sit in the studio and do a full length thing, I think it'll be really good. So I hope you enjoyed being here this afternoon. Awesome conversation, you know, with the stories about Carlos and the Allman Brothers, and you know, just the Wailers. It's just such great stuff. And I'm a fan of your music, and hopefully we'll get a chance to see you tomorrow night at Thelma's, and it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, hope to see you there. Thanks a lot, Freddie. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Thank you. All right, Michael Glebicki from Rusted Root, and we got a little bit of a shaky connection there, but hopefully everybody got the idea. I would like to get Michael in the studio live, man, the next time he comes around, and we could, you know, play some guitars and that kind of thing, and I think that would be a real blast. But I've always been a fan of those guys, and if you're into that kind of stuff and you like that hippie vibe, man, tomorrow's the place. Put on that tie-dye and enjoy the hippie vibe. I think that's what we should have promoted that a little more, because that is what you're going to get at Thelma's. Also, if you've never been to, oh, I know what I wanted to ask him about too. And Woodstock 99. Damn it. Damn it. Damn it. You know, the phone was a little annoying. You know, we were breaking up a little bit, but next time I talk to him, I want to talk to him about Woodstock 99, because those guys played there, and that was kind of a disaster. It ended up, first of all, what they were trying to do was recreate a happening, and you're never going to do that. You'll never, ever be able to recreate Woodstock, because it was such a happening, and it was, you know, once again, it was such a vibe that was going on there, and, you know, that's why they call it a happening, because it just happens and you can't recreate that. But Woodstock 99 was kind of goofy. Nine Inch Nails played there. That doesn't make it goofy, but Dave Matthews was there. First of all, it was scorching hot. And then they had problems with the water. And the Insane Clown Posse was, they started throwing money into the audience. And of course, you know, you got a huge audience like that, start throwing money in there. Geez, guess what's going to happen? $100 bills. Grab a handful of $100 bills in a sea of people, 20, 30, 40,000 people, and just start throwing $100 bills out there. Let me tell you what's going to happen. You know, I've seen people trample other people and go goofy over less. Kid Rock was there. And I think he kind of got that vibe going. A lot of people, you know, Show Us Your Tits was a big thing there. And even Dave Matthews was on the Show Us Your Tits bandwagon. And the MC, you know, Woodstock, they had Wavy Gravy and Don't Eat the Brown Acid. At Woodstock 99, they had Mini-Me, Vernon Troyer.
Oh, wow.
And he's a goofball to begin with. He's out there. And so it was just like it was really a goofy, it turned into a goofy thing. And I wanted to ask Michael about that, but like I say, our connection was a little shaky. Yeah. I mean, I think Michael, I could talk to him for 2 hours with no problems at all.
Easily, yeah.
So we got our new producer here today with us, Lucas. Lucas, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Because Joe is on vacation. Joe. Oh, did we get a winner?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Joe actually had a show where he took the box on the road.
Oh, okay.
He took it with him. So that's why.
He thought I'd walk out with it. Yeah, Joe, that's right. If nobody's here and he's not keeping an eye on that box. You know, hey, Joe, I don't know what happened to the safe.
It's gone. I don't know if somebody took it with
So then when we come back next week, if nobody wins here, we'll be at about $1,200.
He's going to count this week. So it should be about $1,200 and a pair of AirPod Pros.
Yeah, nobody even cares about the AirPod Pros. Nobody cares. Yeah, nobody gives a damn. They're like $1,200.
Yeah, three digits. I think I can get
it. Maybe we should just find a big crowd somewhere and just throw the money out there and see what happens. Just start throwing $100 bills into a big crowd. Make it rain.
Yeah.
But, that's what's going to happen here, though. You know, that's going to be a great show tomorrow down at Thelma's. So, like I say, if you're one of them people that dig that hippie vibe, man, that is that's something you're definitely going to want to check out. Rusted Root, man. I mean, these guys, it's amazing on how big and how fast they got popular, too. And being outside the mainstream with their sound, you know, they're not like, cover band, bar band, or anything like that. I mean, they have a sound, and like Michael said, that it's hard to describe.
Right.
And it's just a cool vibe all the way around. So if you're looking for something to do tomorrow, make sure you head on out to Thelma's. And if you haven't been out to Thelma's, it's a really great place in Sharpsville. I mean, it's right on the river, and you know, they have nice patio, and then they have a big stage outside and a covered seating, and it's very cool. Very cool place, like, and the food is good too. So stop by and see Shannon and Mike and all my friends out there. And I was trying to get Terry Day from Grand Street Exit to come in, but he had some previous commitments. We'll work on this next time, because this one just kind of fell in place pretty quick.
Right.
But I definitely want to talk to Michael again, because that
be
guy's
great
got
to get
some good stories.
Yeah.
Let's see who's checking in. Hey, my man Jay Bird is checking in today. Keith Sturgeon, good to hear from you, Keith. Rosemarie, Tequila Rosie checking in. Vinny Style, Bud Light Vinny Style, Dilly Dilly, baby. Jeff Gregory is watching. How you doing, Jeff? And our friend Elizabeth just rolled in, literally. And so those are some of the people checking us out. I know everybody's bummed, though. Where's the money, dude?
Yeah, you know,
I don't want to hear about this music talk. Well, tell me about the show me the money. That's what I, you know, show me the money. Also, I'm going to work on getting these people on. I just got this book in the mail today, and I see they did a little thing on Channel 27 the other night. And the name of the book is called Aerosmith is ZZ Top, A Dad and Daughter's Rock and Roll Journey. It's by Terry Armstrong and his daughter, Mariah. and they are just like rock and roll nuts. They love rock and roll. They live for rock and roll. And I'm looking at their book, and it looks like they've met more people in the rock and roll business than I have. And they went to all these concerts. They love going to concerts, and they just kept a record of every place they went.
That's awesome.
And every show. And it's a lot of fun. So I can't wait to get them on. They will be on here in a couple of weeks as well. But the book is called Aerosmith, the ZZ Top. And they just been all over the place. And we've been to a lot of the same shows too. So I'd like to talk to them about that. They went to see Elvis Costello at Blossom Music Center. They're big Bruce Springsteen fans. They went to see Creedence Clearwater Revisited at the Q in Cleveland. And some people diss Creedence Clearwater Revisited because it's the drummer and the bass player, you know, and they had a big falling out with John Fogerty, legendary story that, you know, we don't really have to get into, but I'll tell you, they played at Stamp Auditorium and I thought they did a good job. And the drummer, Doug Clifford, Cosmo, and Stu Cook, the bass player, they were two of the coolest guys I ever met. And we were sitting backstage and we were talking about all kinds of stuff because those guys, you know, they were on the Johnny Cash show. They were, you know, they were at part of Woodstock and they just had a million stories. I'd love to get those two on the show because it would be very interesting. And Cosmo, the drummer, this guy is like a health nut. Which made me not like him though, you know, because when you're out of shape and you got a big belly and stuff, and there's this guy, was probably 70, and this guy was solid muscle, solid muscle. And it's like, okay, that's not how a rock and roller is supposed to look. If you've been to Woodstock, I don't think you should look like Charles Atlas. Yeah. I don't think you should be Jack LaLanne. I don't think you should be standing here doing jumping jacks and push-ups. Yeah, right. You know, right. You should practically be on a walker and not be able to put two sentences together. But it was a lot of fun. But I'm looking forward to getting these guys on. And Elton John at the Covelli Center, that was a good show. Journey, they went to see Journey and Kiss and just everybody. It's amazing on how many shows these people went to. Paul McCartney at the Q, Skinnerd. See, that's my rule. You never just say Skinnerd. You don't just say, oh, Skinnerd. Skinnerd, you got to yell it out. Skinnerd! Skinnerd, asshole! And you usually have to say asshole, too, you know? That's like, I've learned that from playing out many, many years, you know? Hey, Skinnerd, asshole, next! Play Skinnerd, Freebird! Freebird, next! In my book, that's what my book is going to be about, how I want to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I want to go into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as being the guy that invented yelling out Freebird at the most inopportune time. I want to take credit for being the guy that started that whole thing. And I think they should have a spot for me in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Get you a nice little plaque.
Yeah. Right, the guy that invented yelling out Freebird, next asshole, Freebird. See, that's what I do. When I walk into a bar, I go right up to the front of the band or the DJ, and I just start yelling that on top of my lungs. And if I get kicked out, I know that's not a place I want to be. Yeah. And if they actually do play it next, then I know I'm in the right place.
Yeah.
And if I want to take it one step further, then if they play Freebird, then I start yelling, Skin to win! Skin to win! You know, and then I know I'm in the right place. It's pretty easy to weed out the places where you're not welcome,
right?
You know? Where you don't want to be. But yeah, good book there. And I can't wait to interview those folks as well. Mariah and Terry Armstrong. And I think it's going to be pretty good. Michael Hogan checking in today. How you doing, Michael? We got to get Hogs on here. That's Joe's cousin. That's Joe's cousin. And the Hogs is a funny character, boy. I should have invited you down today, Hogs. We should have brought you down, man. He always has something interesting to say. As a matter of fact, Hogs had one of the original blogs. He was a blogger before all this stuff even went down because, of course, Joe being his cousin, and you know, Joe has been on the cutting edge of the whole computer age from day one. I mean, just look at this studio, the stuff that we have in here. You know, he's like a madman. He's like a mad scientist. He loves the space launches. He wants to go up. Now they have the two guys are competing now with the
Elon Musk and, yeah, and Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, Jeff Bezos. They're competing now with the space. You know, these guys have so much money that they could just shoot these rockets off.
Jeff Bezos is going.
I know.
He said he's going up with his brother.
They were making fun of his spaceship. They were calling it the giant dildo and stuff. And then Elon Musk, he just blows them up left and right.
Yeah.
He just blows them up left and right. Yeah, Steve Ruman remembers Hoags as the voodoo man at the Scrappers game. I think the Scrappers missed an opportunity. They didn't let the voodoo man develop properly. They did not let the character of the voodoo man. I they were a little afraid of the voodoo man because Hoags is a kind of an unstable guy, right? And I think they didn't want Hoags to take the voodoo man too far.
Yeah.
They were worried. They didn't know because, you know, with Hoags, you don't know. Hey, Hoags, why don't you give us a call, man? Why don't we talk about voodoo man? If you do want to call in and jump in on the conversation here, our phone number is 330-595-1600. 330-595-1600. If you're watching on the screen, you could see us there. But Dave Price says, things not to do at a funeral. Yell out, Skinner! Freebird! I don't know what funerals you go to. Says who, Dave? Yeah, Hoags, give us a call. We'll talk about Voodoo Man. But I think that was the problem, man. They were a little afraid of where Voodoo Man was going to go. I think they were afraid that Voodoo Man was going to become bigger than the team. That's what I think it was, you know. But, yeah, where were we? Oh, tell us a little bit about you, Lucas. You know, okay. you just started here with Joe, right?
Yeah, I just started here at the beginning of May.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's been an experience learning, you know, kind of ins and outs of the studio. And obviously, like you said, it's like a mad scientist, you know, every day I walk in, there's something new, new piece of technology I got to learn.
I know.
But I love it here. You know, I'm producing shows, making art for you guys. And, you know, it's a really cool experience to get to sit down here and, you know, I'm a Youngstown native, graduated twice from Youngstown University. So,
Okay. What did you study? Computers, media, all that stuff?
This was kind of a passion. I did, and along with video and photo is a passion, but I got my undergrad in advertising and public relations.
Oh, okay.
And I got a master's in business administration.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, smart way to go, man. Yeah. Smart way to go. Yeah, don't hang around with this podcast too much. Don't let this podcast drag you down, man.
I love music, man.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So anyways, if anybody wants to give us a call here today, 330-595-1600. Unfortunately, Joe took the safe with him. And so we're not doing the money giveaway this week. I know a lot of people are close. Everybody I talk to that's a fan of the podcast and then follows us are like, dude, I know what it is. I think I got it this time. You know, I know Steve Ruman was checking in every time I see him walking down the street or on the bike trail or something. He's like, I know what it is. He'll yell out some number, you know? So anyways, if you would like to talk to us and, yeah, we got to get the Hoags on. Hoags, give us a call. Yeah,
he's on here. You want me to patch him in?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Let's go ahead.
All right.
Hello.
Hold on. It's connecting.
What up, Fred?
Oh, there you are. Okay, Hoags, we got you there. Let us turn up the volume here a little bit. How you doing, Hoags?
Good. I just went and ordered a Uptown Pizza in Liberty.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good pizza. Well, maybe
50. No coupon.
Okay, you just went straight up, paying full price.
Yeah, I don't like doing that, but I bit the bullet today.
All right. The Hoags is on the line here with us. First of all, Hoags was the voodoo man at the Scrappers games. Now, tell everybody a little bit about the voodoo man, and do you agree with me that I think they were a little afraid of the voodoo man? I think they didn't know where the voodoo man was going to go, and I don't think they thought they would be able to control the voodoo man if it got too big and too far out of hand.
Who was the GM? Wasn't that Andy Milovich?
Yes.
Andy Milovich would call the house and he'd say, hey, Hoags, we want you to bring the voodoo man out. And I'd say, hold on, let me ask him if he wants to go. Because obviously the voodoo man's another character, another dimension. So I remember one time I bought 500 voodoo skulls from Nanacolas, who's our quality people, Nanacolas. And I'd pass them out to the kids and I'd put the super hex on anybody that we were playing against, and I'd be up there yelling, "You're going to be bagging groceries at Sparkle tomorrow." Your mother calls. She said, "You suck." Well, the scrapper guys were all cool with me. You know, I had the football helmet on, new face mask, face paint, rec specs, shin guards, chest protector, and the voodoo bag. And the voodoo bag obviously had the voodoo skull. Incidentally, I recently jumped again on a tandem jump, and I remember I qualified the voodoo skull like 15 years ago. Actually, when the Cleveland Indians did really good, I shattered the voodoo skull. But to get back to Cafaro, the scrappers, I think Voodoo Man would have did good because he was a situational heckler. Yep. I wasn't there being crazy 9 innings straight. I'd pick my shots and I'd make guys collapse. And probably I'd tell them, "You're going to be selling cars at a used car lot after, you know, this series is over with." But I'd have to see these same assholes at the bar. Because I'd go to the bar where everybody parties at. They're like, "That's the little fucker we want to beat." And I'm like, "It was a good ride. It was a good ride. I might reintroduce it sometime."
Smack him in the mouth, Vic. That used to be one of my favorites.
Well, it was Willie was the third base coach.
Oh, Willie. Yeah, Willie the third base coach. That's right.
And I'd always go out there and say, "Smack him in the mouth, Willie. Smack him in the mouth." Yeah, that was good times. Good times. I put the whammy on a lot of guys. I fucked up some careers. I know it.
I know, man. The voodoo man. I don't know if you were ahead of your time or if they were, like I say, I just think they were a little afraid of the voodoo man because they didn't know where it was going to go. But I will give you credit too for being a situational heckler. That is a good heckler. If you just keep doing it, then all of a sudden, you know, you're an annoyance. You're almost an asshole. You know, even the people that are there like, right. Oh, okay, maybe the guy got to shut up and let us watch the game here for a little bit. But yeah, you were a pretty good heckler. Now, have you always had that heckling skill even before you went to Voodoo Man? I mean, how long have you been a world-class heckler?
You know, working in the prison as long as I have and being in the Marine Corps, you know, it all just fit. You know, situational heckler should be on one of my many business cards. Actually, I'm a master of critical speech and persuasive argumentation. So that's my definable repertoire right now.
Right. You need your own podcast down here. That's what you need. I'm surprised you don't have one.
I'd like to get down there and mess around with that stuff, but I'm not real literate. Even though I did 4 years at YSU, you know, I just went there to stay out of prison. You know what I mean? That kept me out of jail.
Right.
Because it was structure. I got to be around. That's why I work out, you know, a couple times a day. I'm running at the high school. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Because I can't sit still. And there's plenty of time to sleep when you're DEAD. So I'm going to keep on running until the wheels fall off. You know what I do.
Oh, I know what you do. Yeah, I know what you do. Now, you were one of the first people to have a blog because you teamed up with Joe, who was way, way on the cutting edge of computers. And you teamed up with Joe to have Hoags.com, which was like one of the first blogs that was out there. And it was just, it was complete nonsense. It was complete nonsense.
I remember we got a response back from one of Charlie's Manson's, whatever those girls are, they went to prison. Yeah. One of them started blogging to us through somebody else or whatever, and she wanted Hoags to be the father of her child. So she wanted me to send some product, refrigerated, obviously, right, to her place of confinement so she could make future Hoagies. And I'm like, wow. Yeah. With a little swastika, you know, it was just Joey did so well for himself, but nobody knows when Joey was out there just, you know, working hard, pounding on doors, chasing. So, you know, I'm happy that Joey got everything he got coming.
Oh, I think so. And, he's always willing to give back, and he really was like the first company that was on the cutting edge of fixing computers. Youngstown Computer Service has been around since day one. It seems like they've always been around. And, you know, that's like his main thing is, you know, the whole computer repair and setting up networks and everything. And the rest of this stuff, this is just like his like little playroom down here, you know?
And he's got that sparkle, that twinkle in his eye all the time.
Yeah.
He's thirsty just to do the eccentric, you know, think a little bit different, off cuff. You know, he's not a mainstream dude.
No, he's
and,
not.
And you know what? Joey's going to do good at whatever Joey decides to do good at. I just hope he continues to surround himself with good people like you and, you know, other guys in the studio, other gals in the studio, and the sky's the limit, man. Because it's all about creating communication between, you know, people like ourselves and the masses.
Right.
And making people feel important, you know what I'm saying? And you've been doing that, Freddie, for 30-plus years.
Well, see, Hoags, I still say you need your own podcast, at least like maybe once a month or something. They should have the Hoag Show. But I definitely got to get you down here and get you in the studio. And, hey, we'll do a little sipping, man. You bring that bottle of Crown down here. You know, we're allowed to do that on this. You should bring your whole crew of Solids down here one day and move your meeting down here, move it out of your house and come on down here. I think that would just be off the hook. I don't know how we would be able to control that. Nor would we want to. That would be the idea. We wouldn't want to control it. We would want it to just roll.
And you're saying we could bring a little whiskey?
Yeah.
I'm drinking Salted Caramel right now. $21.34. That's going to be my next tattoo. 2134.
Yeah, I mean, we have to get Hoags down here just so you see his collection of tattoos.
Words and numbers, Fred.
And the one that he has, it says verb because he's an action word.
I got that when I walked by Ron Verb one day. And Ron Verb helped Joey out along the way, too.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say nothing bad about the great Ron Verb.
No.
But that's how that word jumped out of me one day when I was cosmically. You know me, when I used to walk the dog in a thunderstorm and lightning, I'd wrap tinfoil on my wrists and my throat. And people were like, why are you walking your dog? It's because you can get electrocuted. And I'm like, hey, maybe I will, maybe I won't. You know what I mean?
Hey, how do you think those superheroes get their powers, man? Most of it, you know, Back to the Future and everything, it all revolves around lightning. So, and like you say, man, sometimes you got to pull down your pants and slide on the ice.
That's it.
Yep.
All day, every day.
All right, Hoags.
We do us, buddy. Hey, thanks for letting me call. Yell at me sometime along the way. Stop for a sippy on the way home if you want to.
Yeah, usually by that time, you know, by the time I get done and everything, you guys are wrapping up, or I'm just like, okay, I got, you know, it's been a long day. But like I say, I think one day we move, we bring the whole crew of Solids down here. We bust out some whiskey and we get that Crown Salted Caramel down here and we solve the problems of the world and take it beyond that.
We can do it. Meet the press. Call it Meet the Press. We used to get together and talk politics and drink. We call it Meet the Press night.
Yeah, I try to stay away from the whole political thing now, man. My thing is the music and the goofy stuff, and that's where my mind's at these days. Too much politics out there for me.
I haven't watched TV in 7 years, Fred. 7 years. I don't even know what's going on out there.
Yeah.
I don't even want to know.
Yeah.
I'm
hey.
Just doing my thing.
Me and your dad are coming up with a business idea too. So maybe he'll talk to you about it, but we're working on a plan. I ran into your old man today and it was kind of like Kramer and Jerry Seinfeld's dad or George Costanza's father. And we're hatching out a business plan here pretty soon. So we'll see what happens.
He wants to go skydiving for his birthday.
Well,
since we just, me and Matt made that tandem jump, he's like, hey, I'm turning 82 at the end of August. I want to go jump. And I'm like, Fox, you sure you really want to do that? He's like, hell yeah, man. Don't tell me what I can't do.
Yeah.
So I think on his birthday, we're getting a group together and we're going to go exit the plane 13,005 again.
Now, you just did skydiving here a couple weeks ago. What was that all about? Where'd you go? What was
last
that like?
Sunday. Last Sunday, we hit the Cleveland Parachute Club. And, you know, me and Chuck Sullivan hit that before. Me and Johnny Cinelli hit it another time. So, you know, it's good. It's just good. It cleans out the circuits, man. Anytime you can get up there and overcome that fear, because anybody that tells you they ain't a little bit concerned.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. You know, you have a meet God moment when you jump out of a plane, because if it don't work out, it's all the way bad. So Maddie was cool. She did her thing. I did my thing. You catch 55 seconds traveling 120 to 140. So where are you going to get that kind of speed, man?
Oh, I hear you.
That adrenaline rush, but it's you really got to mentally make yourself do it because it's not a natural thing. 1%
exactly.
Of the population, I think.
Now that's right. Like, you know, and I know it's not the same, but that basic instinct is the same. I did bungee jumping when that first come out. I did bungee jumping. And once again, though, that's the same thing. Your mind is telling you when you, first of all, they would always say, don't look down, don't look down, look at the horizon. And when you get to the top, when you go, just fall forward and that's it. But if people look at the look down, first of all, if you look down, you're kind of screwed because you're looking. And once again, your natural instincts tell you, I'm on the top of this, and that's a long way down. And when you take that first step off the platform, that's another thing, because your mind is telling you, hey, dummy, that's not what you're supposed to do when you're at this height. And then when you go flying down, and I can imagine what the adrenaline rush is when that parachute opens and you pop up, because with the bungee jumping, it was like you got that, what they call the yo-yo-like rebound. And you're just sitting there going, I hope this thing catches. I hope this thing catches. And then all of a sudden, boom, and then you just get so released.
That breaks, man.
Yeah, yeah. So that's
different. I give you more credit. Bungee jumping, you got to look down. You have no choice.
Yeah.
That's your direction of travel.
Yeah.
When you exit an aircraft, probably 80% of the time or 50% of the time, you're exiting looking at a skyline. The clouds that day were beautiful.
Yeah.
And nothing can, you know, duplicate that. But bungee jumping, you have no recourse but to look down at what's going to maybe kill you. When you jump out of a plane, you could look up into the sky and you catch up to the fear. You
right.
You understand my point?
Yeah, I get you.
But you bungee jump, you're right there, man. Your chin is pointing to the ground. And I know you ain't closing your eyes. So it's just like, you know, this is crazy, crazy shit. It's like dating a crazy chick. You know what I mean? We keep going back to them, and it's like that first car in a roller coaster. You go up that hill, first hill, big hill. You're the first car. You put your hands in the air, and you're like, yeah. Other times you grab that steel, and you're like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die.
Right.
But somewhere between happy and sad, it makes you keep on moving.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It makes you keep on moving.
I hear you. Hey, and then we got to go for a motorcycle ride, too. We're going to get you on a little confidence builder. How's that?
I know, I'm on my training wheels. You know, I was dating a beautiful woman, loved her so much, still to this day. And she's a motorcycle chick, and she told me, Hogs, you know, you need to put a little pep in your step, man. You're not blowing down Route 11 quick enough, man. And she likes going 100 miles an hour. And I'm like, wow. You know, I could jump out of a plane, but something just tells me, you know, if you mess up on a bike, there's no recourse. It's feet, knees, stomach, face.
Right.
And I've wrecked bikes before.
Yeah,
I wrecked bikes before, so I think I broke enough shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Jaws, arms, elbows, done a little bit of damage, little concussions here and there.
Right.
But I do want to ride with you.
Yeah, we definitely will. We definitely will.
One
but
thing I do, I look good on a bike, though, Fred.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, especially now that you got the goatee going and stuff. You know, you look. You look a little wild. You look a little crazy. You look like you're a little off, that there's something a little bit wrong with you, that you're not quite right. So, yeah, I think you do look good on there.
When I first started riding, Freddie, I didn't even know how to ride.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go to bike night.
Yeah.
And I would fucking put the bike on the trailer 2 hours before bike night. And I'd go to bike night and just stand around it, right? And then I'd have to wait at the end when everybody fucking left. Right, to get my bike out of there, because I sure as hell wasn't riding at home. You know what I'm saying? That's like when I went to college. I carried a guitar case around. Never had a guitar. Couldn't play no music for shit.
Yeah.
Guitar cases, chicks are like, hey, there's a musician.
Right.
Sometimes I take a bass. Sometimes a puppy dog. You got to do those things.
Exactly. And those all work there, man. The guitar case, the puppy dog. I'll tell you, the puppy dog seems to really work. I mean, you could be the biggest goof off in the world, and if you have a puppy, the girls are going to love you. It's amazing on how that works.
I'm only trying to capture the attention of one human being right now on the female side.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of like one of them dudes that just does too much. I suffocate.
Yeah.
Because I live life like it's the last day.
So, right.
You know, let's go do what you want to do this. Let's go do it. What you need this. It's done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Cause I don't give a shit about it, Fred. You know me, I'm a dollar store dude. I've been poor forever.
Pull down your pants and slide on the ice, man.
Yeah. So when you make a couple bucks, I'm like, hey, if the ice cream truck's down the street and there's four or five kids there, I'm going to go ahead and drop 25 bucks, 50 bucks, buy some ice cream. But I'm the same guy. If you owe me money, and I find out you're in the hospital, I'm going to call you and say, hey, I heard you're not doing so good. You know, a grass cutting job or something. I called people before.
Right.
They were close to death. And they said, what do you call me for, Mike? And I'm like, you're in for two cuts. I'm checking the obituaries. They're saying you're not going to make it. Okay. I used to go check all the phone booths in Niles for quarters.
Right.
The operator, I'd call the operator. I'd say, hey, I got a bad phone here. And they say, give me the number of the phone. My old man started getting quarters in the mail from Ohio Bell. He's like, what is this? I'm like, that'd be mine. That was my scratch, my hustle, that quarter.
That's the thing, man. You have to have some kind of a hustle. You got to play all the angles, Hogs, and you're a master at that. You know, just even.
I just got my paper out back, Freddie, my same paper out back when I was. Do you know the story? When I turned 40 some years old, I got my same route, same neighborhoods. I had some of the same customers. And I'm like, wow, how serious is this shit for real? It's really not. I came full circle, Freddie. I'm 55 years old. And I could say I got my old paper out back as a 40-some-year-old, same customers. It's like, how relevant is a lot of this shit, Fred? That's why you just got to take it one day at a time, enjoy your people, be good to yourself, be good to other people. That's what it's all about. I'm a motivational junkie.
I know that.
I ain't about abusing drugs. I'm not about abusing alcohol, although I will dabble in that industry.
Oh, yeah.
On the alcohol side. But, right. But I'm still out there putting my miles in. So if you see me go, I'm cool. Anybody that knows me knows Hoax. So we're cool, just like you. We've already made our bones. We know what we're about. Now it's time to give. So for those kids that I see along the way or the people in my life that are important, I'm going to make sure they're taken care of best I can.
That's what makes you the Hoax. That's why you are the Hoax.
Well, but you know what? I got good examples like you, Fred. You're always good to me. I walked into your radio show one morning. Remember back in the freaking 80s and said, hey, I want to be on the radio. You didn't even know me.
Yep.
Who is this dude knocking on the door saying CD106? You know, and I'm like, yeah, put me on. Let's do some shit.
That's the way it used to be. You could just walk into the radio station and there we go. We didn't even have a lock on the door in that place. We never even had a lock on the door. You know? Well, we did have it for one time, and then we did have it one time, and Casey Malone locked herself out on a smoke break and had to break a window to get in, and I don't think we've ever put the lock back on ever since then.
You know what we should have did, Fred? Remember when you came up with that idea of going to all the American League stadiums with the voodoo man?
Yeah.
And running out, jumping the fence, and seeing how far you can get into the outfield before they tackle you. And I said, I'll do it, and you know, get the best time in the American division. But I needed bail money to get out. We never did nothing with that. We should have did something with that.
Hey, that's still a possibility, man. Don't write that off. Don't write that off the list. That's still there, man.
I think if we took the voodoo man and we put him in a position, but you know, I'd have to change costumes all the time because after you do it the first time, they're going to be like, oh, that's the dude that's going to go to every stadium and do some stupid shit.
Right.
So you got a back door.
It's like those those big titty women. You know the minute they walk into the stadium, something's going to go down. You know,
right.
The kissing bandit or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Elapsed time, Freddie, in the American League.
Yep.
I always wanted to go to spring training with you, and I know you invited me, but I never had no money to be able to go.
Well, maybe next year. You know, now that Matt, you know, with the Blue Jays, and boy, we had a blast down there. Oh, Joe wants to know, is that the Hoax? Yes, Joe, that's the Hoax. Joe's checking in out on the road here. And he wants to know.
Was in the Gustmobile?
Yeah. Yeah, he's out there.
That's cool. I tried to hook him up with one of my Marine Corps buddies. He said he was in Boston, he said. And I got a buddy from Martha's Vineyard who's out of his mind, like, close to being insane.
Yeah.
And Joey wanted to hear some Boston accent. So I said, call Michael J. Brezhnev. Brezhnev actually impregnated a girl in Niles when I had him in a home on leave in the Marine Corps.
Uh-huh.
50-yard line, high school.
Yeah.
My old man sees some dude at the post office about 6 months ago. And they start talking. And he says, yeah, he goes, my daughter still stays with me. She had a kid from some Marine that was in town on leave.
Uh-huh.
The 50-yard line of the football field. So Mike, I call my buddy Mikey. I said, Mikey, you got a fucking son.
Uh-huh.
He's in Niles. He said, no way, Hoax. I'm like, yeah, you got to come see him. What the hell? I got kids that might be on the Korean soccer team.
Yeah.
The Olympic soccer team. I mean, Korea, Okinawa.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
There might be some little ones out there running amok.
Yeah. There might be.
Anyway, Freddie,
All right. Hey, listen, Hoags, we got to get you in studio. We got to get you and the whole solid crew in here and drink some alcohol. Bring that bottle of caramel salted crown down here. We'll polish that off and motivate people, inspire people, just all around good times. Just share the good feelings.
Good stuff, Freddie. Good stuff. I love you.
All right, Hoags. Love you too, brother. Take care, man. That's the Hoags. The Hoags needs his own podcast. John Pushcar wants to know if there's a headboat you could cast off of at the Breakwall Marina. I think there is up in Conneaut. I know they had one at one time, and I know they have one in Presque Isle for sure, but I'm pretty sure they had one up there, John, if I am not mistaken. I didn't see it this year. I was just up there the other day, and I didn't see it yet, but I think they might have one up there. Huh. All right, man. So there you go. That's the Hoags. And I do believe that the Hoags needs his own podcast. What do you think, Lucas?
I think so.
But is he situational? You know, he might be situational. There are certain people, like he said, he was a situational heckler.
Right.
There are certain people that are situational guests. You don't want them in every week because then after a while, it's just like either it wears on you. Maybe you can't handle it. Maybe it's too much. In a good way or in a bad way.
Right.
You know who's a situational guest like that? Viking Jim. I haven't had Vike on for a while. He's about due to come back on.
Yeah.
But he's another one that's situational, right. You know, because a little bit of him goes a long way.
Right.
You know, you bring him in, though. Everybody loves him. They can't believe the shit that he was talking and the things that he was saying. And then, you know, then he goes away for a while. And then when he comes back, it's a novelty. So that's that's, you know, maybe Hoags doesn't really need a whole podcast like twice a week or something. He might drive you nuts. You know, he might wear on you, you know, but yeah, situational guests. I don't think you could beat the Hoags.
Right.
I think he's pretty good. He's pretty good. So how about you? What are some of your favorite bands and stuff?
So I'm kind of into I'm in the hip hop scene right now.
Okay.
But you know, I have appreciation for the olders, you know, stuff like, I listen in the rock. Are you talking about like in the rock scene?
Yeah, I would say rock. Yeah.
Okay.
Do I look like a hip hop guy?
Never know.
You know what? I was playing a graduation party for my nephew on Saturday, and there was these, you know, younger kids there, and they wanted to hear something from Top 40, you know, from Hot 101 or whatever. And I was like, I'm sorry. I couldn't even tell you what songs are on the top 40. If somebody said, what's the number one song in the country today? I wouldn't have a clue.
I couldn't tell you either. I like the underground hip hop stuff.
Oh, okay. But, so who's some of the big names in the underground hip hop? Who should we be looking for?
Looking for underground hip hop. Hmm. You know, I mean, a lot of them, there's a guy called Snot.
Okay.
And he spells it with a cash money sign.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, you got to,
yeah. He's pretty good. You know, they're becoming more and more mainstream because they find these underground artists and they want to bring them straight to the top because they're the actually talented ones, not the industry plants, stuff like that. But, you know, in the rock scene.
Now let's talk about hip hop. Let's talk about Snot and people like that, man.
So, you know, you got these guys now, and if you have a decent laptop, anybody can make a number one hip hop beat anywhere. I mean, it's crazy. These guys that are talented and they record it off their laptop in a basement and they blow up overnight via TikTok. Stuff like that, Triller, all these apps that allow all these artists to reach massive amounts of people in a day, you know, and then you got these overnight stars coming up and the industry's getting flooded now. It's crazy.
Think about how it used to be to get ahead though, in the music business, like you would have to work at it and be on tour and just do all this work and everything, you know, and constantly touring and playing 7 nights a week and then trying to get signed and hope a record label would keep you. And then, you know what? Okay. We don't want hair bands anymore. We want grunge. We don't want, we need something now with a disco beat and just all this stuff, you know, that has happened throughout the years. You know, oh, we need somebody now with makeup. No, we don't need anybody with makeup. We need this. We need that. You guys are in. You guys are out. Now, everybody is their own boss, and everybody controls their own destiny. And I think it's really pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy what the internet alone has done. And, you know, indie artists are at an all-time high because record labels are out. Nobody wants to sign anymore. Nobody wants to sign anymore, you know, unless you're in the traditional ways of music. But, you know, these new guys are coming up and they're making it on their own with all their social media platforms.
And are they making money at this?
Yeah. I mean, it's streaming. I could go put a song on Spotify and Apple Music by the end of the week for free.
Mm-hmm.
Then I get the money from the stream revenue and stuff like that. I mean, granted, that's a whole nother conversation,
right,
because
right.
Spotify and Apple Music, you know, per stream should be paying more for.
Oh, absolutely.
But they're,
I think it's going to be getting to that at some point, because especially now too, I know like a lot of the classic rock artists and stuff that aren't out touring anymore and things like that. I think they really want that money, but you know, also though, I think fair is fair. I think some people don't realize that that's what you do for a living. You know, if you're a carpenter, you build a house and you sell the house. If you're an auto mechanic, you fix somebody's car,
right,
and you get paid for it. That's the same thing with musicians. You know, you make this music, you practiced and you write these songs and you do everything. You know, you should get paid for it. That's what your job is.
Exactly.
And some people kind of think that it's for free. And that's like when Metallica first got, you know, with I can't even think of that. What was it now? The first file sharing. Brain fart. Metallica, when they took on the first file sharing stuff. What the heck was the name of it? I can't believe it. It's like brain fart. Somebody help us out. Metallica and the first file sharings that everybody had was.
I couldn't tell you. That was probably before my time.
Metallica and. Somebody jump in here, post it quick.
Napster.
There we go. Thank you. Okay. You know, I'm getting old. Thank you, John. Yeah. Napster, you know, when Napster first came out, you know, but you can see why these guys are upset. Everybody wants to say, oh, greedy pricks, you don't have making enough money and whatever.
Right.
Well, you know what? How about if you just come and do your job for free and we don't pay you?
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Maybe you should just do that. So I get the whole thing. I think, you know, people should get compensated for what they do.
Right. And they're getting paid per. I mean, especially because, you know, you're taking away Apple Music and Spotify are taken away from, they pay for those and people don't buy the records anymore.
Right.
People aren't buying records. They're just streaming it.
Yeah.
So how do you equate that? You know, and, you know, Spotify's paying artists anywhere from 0.03 cents to 0.08 cents. It's,
I know. No, seriously. And that's got to change. I hate to say it. Well, no, I don't hate to say it. I have a lot of friends that are musicians and I think you should make money for it. That's your job and you're creating something and you're producing something.
Right.
So, you know, pay up, man. Pay up, sucker.
Right. I agree.
There you go. Uh-oh. I might have to become an underground rapper.
Yeah.
Here. So who are some of these other underground rappers, man? You know, and I have never looked at their videos. Now, are their videos like hardcore or what's, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I'd say there's pretty hardcore. I mean, a lot of them, are you familiar with a guy named Travis Barker?
No.
He's a drummer. He was from, I'm blanking on the band he was from, but he was from a big band and he comes down and he takes all these underground artists and he puts them on, punk rock pop songs, and he does the drums for him and makes the beat. It's actually pretty cool. But yeah, I actually have I listen to a lot of I used to listen to a lot of punk rock back in the day, and then even as far back as System of a Down,
right?
That was something I still listen to this day. But yeah, underground artists they're everywhere, and I mean there's groups out there, a lot of rap groups now. There's guys like AG Club, just a group of guys who make songs together. It's similar to Brockhampton, they're no longer underground. They're a lot bigger now. And it's just crazy because you get to watch these guys grow because you're with social media, you're tied into their life. And some people hate it. Some people love it.
Right.
But you're tied into these guys and you just watch the progress. People love to see progress. Like, so
until they get mainstream and everybody right. loves them, then you have to hate them.
You have to.
It has been that way since day one. And even when I was growing up, when I was younger, everybody would want to find these bands. And that was like your band that nobody knew about. And you loved them and you were a diehard fan and you knew everything about them. You know, Metallica is a good example of that.
Right.
You know, Metallica, the people that loved Metallica before the Black Album come out, they were like diehard Metallica fans. Duh, Metallica, the Black Album come out. Next thing you know, their little sister all of a sudden likes Metallica. Yeah. Now it's like, I can't like Metallica because you like them. So the album sucks, which, you know, I think it's a good album, but I get the whole mindset. So that's where it's at these days, you know, is with like some artists like this. So you start following them on all these platforms and nobody knows about them and you're loving them because you know them and you're in the, you know, like-minded fans and you know, you're in the club. It's like, yeah, dude, man, that's my, you know, and then all of a sudden, then like you say, then they become big time. And then it's like, okay, I can't like these guys anymore. The you guys blow, you know,
I found them first.
So. But that was, that's always been a thing about that. Jaybird says same with guns. So there's probably different guns out there that people like, and but it is there are certain things that, you know, you like it because even like bars, I'll tell you what, to give you an example, Jaybird and some of our buddies went out to this place that we like to go to ride our motorcycles up in the Allegheny Mountains called Cougar Bob's. And it's an old schoolhouse from like, I think 1912. And now it evolved into like a place where hunters and snowmobiles would go. It's on Route 666 of all places. And people were liking it because, you know, it was like, oh, Cougar Bob's, man. Yeah. You know, nobody knows about Cougar Bob's. And these guys were up here last week and the place was jam packed. And there was like about six poker runs in there and everything. Oh, and it was like, okay, we can't like this anymore because everybody likes it, man.
Find a new
spot. It must not be fun anymore because everybody likes it.
You know? Everybody wants to be on the cutting edge of something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, that's pretty interesting on how that scene is. And now is there like, you know, different websites and stuff that, you know, like say the equivalent of like Rolling Stone or that write about these people, or are they pretty much just self-contained in their own little,
so usually world? It's like individual people, that come out. There's different guys that are now big for just reviewing music and putting all these underground artists on, you know, they have a big following. They'll go find some dude who's, you know, in the back alley somewhere recording a song, and they review it and they put him onto his whole following. And then he reviews the music, says he likes it, he doesn't like it. There's a bunch of people like that. It's really not a conglomerate writing about him anymore. Right. There's a bunch of different independents that are reviewing songs and putting them out there. You know, it's a lot more personality driven now, not a company driven to review.
Yeah. See, I'm amazed by that because, you know, you might not know this, I'm a little older and, you know, I'm always interested to see on how younger people are reacting to this and how this is growing, because I think a lot of people my age, you really don't get the full grasp of how big this whole thing is, you know? And, I always find that fascinating, you know, well, because, you know, being, you know, in the music business and bands and all that stuff all my life and following this kind of stuff, you know, it's always good to know what the cutting edge is. But I mean, I admit, man, it's beyond me at this point in my life. You know, it's beyond me. You know, I'm an old dude. What can I say? You know, and it's really not for me. You know, I mean, I would look foolish. I mean, I use a lot of those tactics for what we do now, and I was able to adapt to, you know, Facebook and the normal, you know, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram and that kind of stuff. But, you know, it still works on the same principle, you know, and it's just like that stuff's a little younger and a little hipper and a little bit beyond me. And I'd look foolish being in on that, you know, really.
Right.
But but that's the way it goes. Well, what do you think? You about ready to wrap things up here tonight? Man, this time flew by.
Yeah, it's already.
Yeah, 10 to 9. That's good. We'll wrap it up now. Right. And it was good talking to you and chatting with you. And I want to thank Hoags for calling in. And I do want to remind everybody to go make sure you check out Mike tomorrow. Mike Lubicki from Rusted Root. And if you're into the hippie vibe, baby, that's where you're going to want to be tomorrow. That's for sure. You got Grand Street Exit opening. And, you know, they do a lot of great dead music and stuff like that. And then Rusted Root, you know, well, Uprooted is the new project that Mike is working on, but he was like the main guy of Rusted Root.
Gotcha.
And it's going to be a good time. So if you're into the hippie vibe, that's the place you want to be. Get some patchouli oil and let's party with Rusted Root or Uprooted at Thelma's in Sharpsville. Okay, got it. All right, thank you, Lucas. Good hanging out with you today, and thanks for the great job on producing the show here today. And we'll see you next Thursday. We'll have some more guests. I got a bunch of stuff. I kind of miss doing it twice a week because I got a lot of guests that are backed up here. You know, I could probably do it twice. Well, not probably. I have been doing it twice a week till I got my new job. So that's about it. All right, man. So take care, everybody. We'll see you. Have a safe weekend. And we'll be back next Thursday, and I'll have a great guest.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.
You know, right.